Hey guys, welcome to Electronic Dance Money, your number one business resource for making money as electronic musicians and producers. What is up, everyone? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Electronic Dance Money. I'm your host, Christian Casito. We got a great episode in store today. Awesome guest. Philip, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Philip, you're from, you have two businesses technically, but you're starting to mesh them into one. Is that correct? Because you've got Pick Yourself, which is, by the way, a great, great branding, great name for exactly what you're doing. So if you jump right into kind of what Pick Yourself is, and then, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you have a second business, which is your studio doing mixing and mastering.
Exactly, that's the case. So the studio was actually the first thing. This is called Kopilko Productions. It's based in Berlin. So I'm in Berlin in my studio right now talking to you. And I do mixing and mastering professionally for electronic music artists. So pretty similar to what you do, maybe a little bit more specialized into the techno-ish side of things, techno, electronica, house, more than the EDM side. I do have a couple of artists in there, but I would say the specialty is more the kind of techno scene, which makes sense in Berlin, of course.
Yeah.
And Pick Yourself, my second business, this is the kind of piggybacking business that is now starting to take off, actually, which is coaching, courses, everything connected to helping artists grow in whatever they want to build.
Pick Yourself is a great name for exactly the thing that you're trying to teach, which is essentially, you know, people betting on themselves sort of a thing. It's like, in a lot of producers, I feel like, are struggling with figuring out the ways in which they need to focus their time and energy, what's important, and kind of weeding through the mess that is the music industry and the business side of that stuff. And so what we're going to be jumping in today is kind of strategic release building, how to build a good release schedule. And, you know, we'll dive into things like how many tracks should you be releasing per month? Is there a goal you want to hit? That sort of stuff. And then we'll try to jump into the promotional side of releases so we can get some of your insight into that sort of stuff, because there's a lot of things to pick through that. But before we jump into that, I'd love to hear your story and on how you got into electronic music, and, you know, take us all the way back to, you know, when you were a kid starting to listen to music, through that journey and how you got to where you're at today.
Okay, perfect. And one more thing, congratulations on over 100 episodes. I didn't mention that before, but you can be really proud of yourself for pumping out so much consistent goodness for your listeners. I really, really highly appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the story, I grew up in a relatively musical household. My dad was playing guitar all the time, and he still does to this day. I'm inheriting a huge bunch of guitars, one after another. And that was also like my first love instrument, basically. So I learned jazz guitar when I was a teenager. I then ended up in a punk rock hardcore band. And I was actually touring with that band for more than 10 years, releasing several albums, EPs, and basically sleeping in every squat building anyone could ever imagine in Europe. So it was a pretty wild time. But yeah, the interesting thing is this also got me on the producing track, because I was so unhappy with how our first album sounded. So the people in the studio had amazing gear, I think over 30,000 euros worth of gear in that room, but the amount of talent just couldn't back it up. And I could already listen to this and tell, man, like, these guys, like, literally have no clue what they're doing, and from a musical tech standpoint, but also from a technical side. So I got really interested in learning how this all works, and basically DIY self-taught myself all these skills. I bought my first couple of speakers, a little bit of a shitty audio interface, and so I got better and better with every DIY record that I did for my band, and then also for the bands of some friends. Until that band that I had finally came to a moment where it was no longer worth keeping it alive. So we called it quits. We ended the whole thing after all this time, stayed friends to this day still. But this brought me into electronic music because I did not want to rely anymore on other people. I was always the kind of person in that band that was pushing everything. I was the one organizing the releases together with one of the other bandmates mainly. So we were driving the whole thing. And I, at some point, just wanted to put in all the effort, but then also see the benefits and not like drag other people with me and sometimes be maybe held back by them and the lack of ambition. And so electronic music to me was just a natural thing because I could, first of all, do everything on my own. I was relying on other people. And then on the other end, I also enjoyed this incredible freedom. So I was always... The thing that bugged me with the punk rock and hardcore scene is that there were certain genre conventions that I simply felt were, I don't know, just prohibiting creativity in the end. In electronic music, you can basically create sounds from scratch and invent new sounds. And this is amazing. There's so many different tools of synthesizing stuff, working with samples, and all of that to me felt much more inspiring and creative. And this made me switch to this field. To put this into perspective, at this point, I was still not making a living from music. I was still working a part-time job in a marketing agency. So I first of all studied communication science, then got picked up by a marketing agency. I worked as a strategic director, creative director, these kinds of jobs, like really big brands like Ray-Ban, Red Bull, BMW, Mini, all these kinds of big brands. I created concepts for them on how they can connect themselves to the subculture of music, design, art, and so on. But honestly, at some point, I felt that I couldn't take this any further, so I needed to make a decision. Either I go into the marketing direction more, build a full-time career there, or I actually commit to making music my main thing. And luckily, my now wife and back then girlfriend was really supportive because I didn't have anyone in my family who was freelancer or doing anything out of the ordinary. And she was very supportive and believed that I could pull something like this off. And this actually made it possible for me to quit that job, move from Munich, which is a relatively conservative city in Germany, to Berlin, which is the capital of electronic music here at least. And I'm not looking back. I built a full-time studio business first of all, and now on top of that, I'm actually creating this thing with Pick Yourself, which to me is like the more interesting future because I can literally help people live a interesting, fulfilled, meaningful life based on their passion for electronic music.
Yeah, I love what you just said there with Pick Yourself, because that's kind of, I'm starting to kind of go into more of that transitional phase myself of doing some artist coaching stuff. I had a shout out to Diego. I had a quick little call with him yesterday doing like a consultation, just a quick like 30 minutes, and we blew through like four different topics just coaching him on helping him build like a value ladder, how he should be connecting with fans locally, all sorts of stuff. And he was just screaming down, writing notes the whole time. And he was so thankful at the end of it. And it's stuff like that when you're getting that one-on-one engagement with artists and you're able to provide them immense value, things that like they have all these questions, they're not sure the direction they need to go. And by the end of the session, they're like, holy fuck, I know exactly what to do. You've answered everything. That stuff is, it's a different kind of, it's a different kind of feeling when you're able to help someone like that compared to when you're mixing. Like when you're mixing, you do occasionally get that, right? After you go through some revisions, you get to get them to a point where they're, you know, people are really appreciative and they love the work that you did. But sometimes it kind of just ends there and there's nothing left to do unless they bring you another track. With the coaching, it's a little more open-ended because there will always be questions. There will always be something they're working on that they may need help with. And so when you're able to lend them a piece of knowledge that they can take and expand off of, and then you always leave them hungry for more and they want to come back and they want to learn more and they get that excitement and that hunger to keep growing. There's not quite anything that beats that sort of a feeling of helping a producer out like that.
Exactly. Yeah, that totally resonates with me. And I always compare it with like mixing and mastering is delivering a product, but coaching is delivering a transformation. And this is incredible. It's a very, very different feeling. It's very rewarding. And also, there's something to be said about how do you want to grow as an artist. Of course, you can outsource certain things and get the service back, but there's just no way you can just outsource revealing the unknown quadrant. And what I mean with that is there are things that you know that you don't know them, but there's a couple of things where you don't know that you don't know them. And a coach can help you unlock that true potential that is inside of you already, and you just don't know it because you have no way of tapping into this, and you wouldn't even know what service to hire to bring that knowledge up.
Yeah, you can only do so much research online, because you're totally right. Like, you'll find stuff online, but you know, some of the things, some of the YouTube videos that you're watching may or may not apply to you. And it's hard to ask the creator questions, especially if they're a bigger creator. You could leave a comment, but the odds of them seeing that or directly answering your question are slim to none. And sometimes you reach out to them, you contact them on their contact form, and they never even reach out. I know I've definitely done it before. So it's tough to be able to get the exact answers for your situation, because everyone's situation is different. And so finding a coach, I mean, you know, the reason why this podcast is around is because, you know, we mutually come from the six-figure home studio community. And that podcast, and when Chris announced that he was Chris Graham, when he announced he was doing coaching, I immediately reached out to him, scheduled session, and within like two sessions, he came up with the idea for this podcast. And I had no idea that this podcast was even an option. You know, I was thinking about doing a podcast, but it wasn't even really close to what this has become. And without Chris's guidance and his help, he came up with the name for the podcast, which I love. And without that information and that knowledge, I don't think this podcast would ever be here. The level of quality of the guests that I'm able to bring in and the topics that we discuss. And, you know, I get messages of people telling me that the podcast is like exactly everything that they're looking for. And that would, this thing would not be here if it were not for Chris Graham and his coaching. So it's little insights like that that can give you, like, you know, a good coach can kind of take who you are, understand what your process is, what your goals are, what you're wanting to do, and start drawing out ideas of how you can make yourself unique and go into a direction that's going to make you stand out from other people. That's what a really good coach is going to be able to do for you. So definitely, if you're listening to this, be open-minded to the concept of hiring a coach, because it's just like hiring a mixing engineer or a mastering engineer. They're a professional in a specific avenue of this world in music, and they're going to be able to lend some of the best insights to you that most people won't be able to.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. And one more caveat overall to the coaching thing, there is right now a really good number of coaches popping up in the music production world who more talk the talk instead of walk the walk, which I would definitely watch out for. So if someone is trying to sell you coaching, but they don't have a professional studio, for example, they don't mix and master for other people, they don't produce music themselves and put it out there, you should be wary of them, because it's probably more the kind of scammy side of things. And this is happening in all sorts of industries, so just watch out. And it doesn't have to be Christian or myself. It can also be someone else, of course, but make sure to research them and go to someone who's like a trusted resource that also has great free stuff out there. Typically, you can tell if someone puts out amazing free resources that these people will probably provide even more great value when you actually hire them.
Yeah, I think that's like the key element there, is check out their content. What kind of content do they have? Do they have content that makes sense, that, you know, that maybe they do answer some of your more general questions in their content, but, you know, if they're talking about how you should hire them for coaching, that's $500 an hour, but they've never worked in a studio, or they don't really have content for a studio, definitely be looking for a coach that is involved in the music industry. You don't want to get like a business coach that works in, you know, system development for hotels. Like, that's like so obscure, and they're not going to be able to do much for you. So, all great insight. I love it. I love the direction we're heading. Let's jump into more of the strategic release schedule stuff, because I'm curious what your thought process is when you're talking to a new coaching client. And, you know, maybe they're a newish producer. They've got some tracks under their belt, and they're really ready to hit the ground running and start releasing. Where do you start when you're working with a client like that who, let's say, has 5 or 6 tracks? Is there a specific release schedule that you want to set them up on where, you know, maybe they're releasing every month or every 3 months so that they have enough space between releases where they can continue to build up that back catalog? Is there a specific amount of tracks that you would like to see them have before they start releasing? What are your thoughts on all of that?
These are great questions. I'm happy to dive into this. So the biggest problem that I see, first of all, is that people lack consistency. And the consistency not only refers to the output side of things, so what do you actually release, but also to the input side of things. How capable are you of consistently producing high-quality tracks to make sure that this machine keeps running? Because if you have collected 5, 6 great tracks that you did over the last 3 years, your release schedule is going to dry out quite soon. So what I do with every coaching client, first of all, is we start to install a operating system in terms of their productions that lets them consistently put out at least one great sounding song a month. At least. This is kind of the absolute minimum. And I think this is like really important to keep in mind, because if the quality of the music isn't there, no fancy release schedule helps you. And if the consistency isn't there, same thing. Yeah. So I start to create this operating system, first of all, and then we can talk about all the release scheduling and so on. Now, tactically speaking, I think today it makes sense to think about, you're almost going like a ladder, that like stairs that you kind of climb up one by one. The first level that you're taking is bringing some consistency in there in your release schedule, meaning you put out one track per month. The next level that I see is creating a body of work that reflects more than just a couple of singles, meaning, for example, one EP per quarter is a really, really nice thing to do. And then when you really want to create some artistic identity and brand that is connected to you, it makes sense to think about an album. A lot of artists still consume albums by their favorite artists and think that they have to put out an album first of all to kind of, yeah, leave a mark in the scene, basically. But I think you have to do it, you have to approach it the other way around. First of all, the consistency, then a little body of work, and then you can start thinking about some bigger artwork, basically.
Yeah, the album thing's interesting, because I think it's with electronic music, it's different. You know, if you're in a band, I see a lot of bands, you know, they'll start off with an album. And sometimes that makes sense. Sometimes, a lot of the times it does work when you're talking about like a singer-songwriter or, you know, a hardcore band or a metal band. Like they're kind of putting out albums. That's what they're doing. And I can only assume the reason they do that is because it's just so hard for 5 or 4 people to get together, write music, and do that consistently. So sometimes it's best to just let's build up a body of work over the next year, release it as an album. Electronic music is different. It's the complete opposite, where you're pumping it. You want to be pumping out singles. You know, you want to be pumping out remixes, bootlegs, mashups, all sorts of different things to just get your name out there and build up a catalog that people, you know, the Spotify algorithm can take off on and pump you into different little radio stations on Spotify. And eventually you kind of get to the album. The worst thing you can do, I think, as an EDM producer is rushing to an album. You know, the difference between an EDM producer releasing an album and, let's say, a hardcore band that's made up of 5 artists. The difference is that that hardcore band can go to a studio that's going to charge them $8,000 and they get to divide up the cost of that. And that means they're going to get a great producer who knows how to really make them sound good and develop everything and put everything together. They're going to be able to get a really good mixing engineer that's going to be able to take that sound and make it sound at the professional level. As an EDM producer, like, you're kind of doing all of that when you're writing an album. It's hard to, you know, hire out a studio that's going to do a full album for you when you're having to eat up the entire $3,000 cost, especially if, you know, you're trying to go full time, but at the same time you have a full time day job. It's really hard to pay for that sort of cost if you're not saving up. And you know, if your songwriting isn't perfect, that album's not going to do so well. So you need to be able to pump out these tracks, like you're saying, like at least one good song a month. And eventually you'll be able to get to that point where you're writing 4 good songs a month. And then you could go, hey, I'm going to put the release schedule maybe on pause for the next 3 months, announce that I'm working on an album and crank something out. And that's when you get the real good gems. So I love that insight onto like just focusing on the one per month and eventually get to that point of an album. I think albums they're not done enough in electronic music. And I want to see more people put out albums because some of my favorite tracks from artists in electronic music came from albums. Some of my favorite artists, all they do are albums. The Glitch Mob, Nero, just a couple to speak on. Cosmic Gate, Cosmic Gate albums are always some of the best albums I've heard. Tritonal, they release a lot of albums and their music is incredible.
Yeah, albums still have their place when it comes to talking about a brand perspective. So if you really want to establish a strong artist brand and maybe also think about concepts that you want to connect yourself with, a single is just not enough to make that happen. And also in terms of the press coverage that you might get, still an album is just worth talking about compared to singles or even compared to an EP. So at some point, there's definitely a place for it. But first of all, prove to me that you have it, everything it takes to actually pump out music consistently. Then we can talk about EPs, then we can talk about albums.
What would you say is there a specific like marker for when an artist is ready to be releasing an EP? And actually, you know, before we get into that, I really quickly want to talk about the one release per month. When you're talking about one release per month for an artist, are you wanting to see them releasing that track through a record label? Is it just simply they're putting it out as a free download, or is this completely self-distribution that they're working on? What do you like to see?
I would definitely recommend you start distributing it yourself through something like DistroKid. And the reason I'm saying this is if you can get all these skills under your belt, from the production to the releasing and the promotion, you are automatically more worthy of working with a label at eye level because you basically don't need them anymore. That's my philosophy. This is a great place to be in, to have a negotiation, to really work out a deal that is a win-win for both parties. But if you're the little artist that's just screaming for attention and begging for a label to sign you, I think that's just a bad place mentally to operate from. So I would say the first year, you basically self-release, you get a really good rhythm, you know what goes into this process. And then I would say the next step is to think about EPs and maybe signing those EPs with labels. That would be the ideal way. I know that there are many other options on the table and some people just want to start releasing EPs right away. Some people want to send stuff to labels right away. And I think that's okay as long as you don't expect them to sign you. I think it's good for getting feedback, for example, and actually being put back on your feet, like literally hearing from them that your music is not ready yet, which is okay. That's totally okay. That's part of the process. And this is why longevity in this industry is what pays off in the end. The most respected artists have sometimes worked for decades before they had their like real breakthrough album, for example. It is okay if this takes a little bit longer.
You know, I've talked about self-distributing in the past and, you know, cost benefit, or, you know, pros and cons, I should say, of self-distributing, self-releasing, and then pros of cons of going with a label. But I've never talked about the consistency of self-releasing before you actually want to go to a label. And it does make a lot of sense, especially when you're coming from the side of, hey, how the fuck do I promote a track? You know, an artist that's saying, I have no idea how to promote a track. Well, I'm just going to go to a label and they're going to know how to promote the track. And that's just not the case in electronic music. There's so many labels that do not know how to promote a track. And if you're stuck with one of those labels, well, what are you giving up a percentage for then? Like it just doesn't make any sense. But if you're able to release for a full year, learn how to promote a track, test out different marketing tactics and different ad budgets and playing around with different ad creatives, there's a number of things we can go into with that side of things. Yeah, we'll get into the promotional stuff here shortly, but if you can test all that out, develop a really good promo plan over a year, all of a sudden, and you know, a label can go into your body of work and they can see through your social media channels, through your Spotify accounts, they can see your progression over time and each track picking up more and more. That says a lot. And when you're, but if you have all record label releases and you're releasing to different record labels, all of those labels are going to have a prop, more than likely have a different promo plan. They're going to have a different process. They may promote, they may not. They may make you pay to promote stuff, which means if you're not paying, you're not getting promoted, which means the release before that may have done really well because the label knows what they're doing. This release might not do very well. And so now there's an inconsistency on, are you actually good? Like, you know, if a good label is looking at you and they're interested, but they just take a look at your Spotify playlist and it's up and down with like each track on your plays, that's going to look weird. They're unsure. They don't know if you're going in the right direction. They don't know if you know what you're doing in terms of promotion. So at least with self-releasing your own stuff, there is consistency in what you're doing. There's more control over the overall, you know, standard of things. You just don't know how a label works unless you have a friend that went through a label and they can give you some more insight. But I really like that thought process of self-releasing for a year and kind of developing and learning that entire process, because it does give you a lot more leverage when you end up going to a label and you want to release with them.
And it also prevents entitlement. That's a big issue with upcoming artists. So they put out 1, 2, 3 good tracks and they think they're now worth being taken on by some of the label of their dreams. And this to me is just entitlement, nothing else. So you probably don't even know what you're still capable of. And always, I think the self-empowered artists who can do everything on their own, who maybe even start their own party collective, start to organize shows in their own area, those are the ones that labels really want to sign, because they know that they theoretically don't need them anymore. But together, it's like 1 and 1 equals 3, which is an amazing perspective.
Yeah, it's so perfect. So when do you think, after a year of self-releasing, is that when you see consistent? Let's say consistency, because I think consistency is a key word here. It's a key it's a key proponent to the entire machine that we're trying to build. Would you say a year of consistent single releases, after that time, is that when you see artists are the most readily available to start working on longer lengths of projects like an EP?
Yeah, I would definitely say so, because at this point, you're still figuring out who you are as an artist. Your artistic identity is going to shift. So at the beginning, you have this fixed idea of what it can be, for example. But then after a couple of months, your sound will change. Your influences will change. Your whole image and the thing that you want to create, your branding, this will also be in constant change, basically. And I think in the first couple of years, actually, this is still such a fluid process that it's almost impossible to nail down who you are as an artist. So why waste this effort that you could put in into creating what you actually want to be? Why waste so much energy into finding a label, waiting for someone to sign you? So I think it's just better to get going, start dirty, and then basically figure it out on the way. This, to me, is like the best way of dealing with these kinds of things. One caveat to this, I don't want to be super strict about, yeah, you have to release 1 year consistently on your own. This is just when I would start from scratch, how I would approach this strategically. But if someone after 6 releases already finds out, yeah, okay, I'm pretty consistent with my sound, I know what type of label is potentially interested, yeah, you don't have to say no to that, of course. And you can start submitting things and see what happens. But at least you have already learned these skills to keep on self-releasing in case nobody wants to sign you.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's the music industry is very, there's no rules necessarily, right? You're free to kind of do whatever you want. And there is a point to the getting denied by a record label. It fucking sucks. And that can be really demoralizing, you know? And we can sit here all day and we can say, you know, it's a part of the process. It's going to happen and it will. But when you're early on in your career and you like you have your first track you want to release and you start sending it out to labels and they start denying you, that can be rough. It can suck. So going the self-releasing route, you know, you don't encounter that. You're kind of you get excited with your release. You know it's coming out on X day. You know that you're working on this promo plan, that promo plan, and when it releases, you're super excited and you're motivated, and that makes you want to keep working and get the next release out. And when you're sitting there and you've gone through 3 or 4 labels and they've all said no, it's tough. It's tough to get excited for the release. It's tough. You start thinking, well, maybe this track just shouldn't be released. And I don't think that's the case. I think it probably should be put out there. But it's really difficult to want to push for that release, keep sending it to labels, and keep working on stuff. So it's very, very demoralizing. And when you cut that middleman out, right, when you can self-release, that friction's gone. That thought process of like, well, maybe I'm just not good enough, that starts to go away. You start to stop thinking about that, and that influences you to get in the studio more, write more, and get the next release out. And that's just going to improve yourself as a producer.
And there's a reason why I called this whole business Pick Yourself. It's about self-empowerment. And Seth Godin, who I stole this from, by the way, I dropped him an email. He replied and was like, hey, man, I'm so happy that you're making an impact with that, which was super cool to see. So I bought the domain pickyourself.com for the reason this was serious money for me to invest just to get that domain. But I really wanted to go all in on that concept of pick yourself. Seth Godin, in one of his books, writes something along the lines of, yeah, as an artist, just don't wait to get picked by whoever the gatekeeper is.
Yeah.
Pick yourself instead. And I love this line. This like encompasses everything that I believe in. It probably has to do with me coming from this DIY punk rock hardcore background. It's definitely ingrained in my DNA somehow. But I still love that. I still think that this is a really nice character trait to develop, to be self-empowered and to be less dependent of gatekeepers and of other factors. If you can build a supportive network and really trusted relationship with a couple of key people in the industry, that is fantastic because you can still lift each other up together. But just don't wait to get picked. Pick yourself instead.
I fucking love that so much. It speaks so much to the philosophy of this podcast and my business as well. You know, I've talked endlessly about The Go-Giver. I'm sure you've read The Go-Giver. You've heard it a bunch on Six Figure Home Studio podcast. It's a great, great book. And that philosophy of just wanting to help others. If you take the time to just do things the way you want to do them and figure out how you're going to get this track released, how you're going to get promoted, and how you're going to get more streams each time you release a track, you're going to get so much knowledge and you're going to be so grateful for the position that you put yourself in, not someone else, right? Not some label head or some A&R at some label or X person. If you're doing the process of learning how each system works and developing off of that system, you're going to feel much better about your position in the industry and what you're able to do and where you can go. And when you feel that good, you're more willing to help others. And as you start helping others, you're going to lift them up and they're going to bring you along the ride. And there's, again, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, having that one-on-one coaching time with an artist who has all these questions and you're able to give them all these answers, just because you want to help them out, there's no better feeling than that. And they're going to remember those sorts of things. And when you're able to go to other producers locally in your industry and you see them struggling with releases or having difficulties with promotion, and you're just like, hey, why don't you come over? We can talk about this. I'll walk you through my process. You have no idea what that does for that individual. And you're just helping them be a better version of themselves as a producer. You're going to elevate their music, and you don't know whose life that's going to touch in the end. Like it will cascade and go on. And that karma-like effect of just giving, just doing, you know, giving to others and helping others it's the best thing to do in the industry. It's what music is about. And unfortunately, that's been lost over the years, but I'm really starting to see it come back, especially here in Austin, Texas. Man, Austin is one of the best places for collaborations. People open-minded, willing to hear you out, check your stuff out, help you out, and just want to work with you. I've never seen a place so collaborative as Austin. Yeah, definitely. Let's jump into the promoting releases, right? So now we have an idea of what the release schedule should generally look like, when you should be going to labels. But, you know, let's say we're on that first self-release, and what do we do? You know, where do we go to distribute? Once we have a release date set, what are some of the creatives we need to have ready? And what does the actual promotional stuff look like leading up to day one, the release day, and post-release. We can kind of segment some of these stuff out and talk about them, but where do you start with a new client?
So I draw a lot of experience from this time in the marketing agency because I really believe in the power of building a strong brand that lasts for a long time and a brand that is authentic to who you are. And so I'm not as interested in certain technical, tactical little glitches that you can use to your advantage to hack a certain algorithm. I much more believe into building something that naturally, organically pulls people into your ecosystem. And so what does this mean for artists? Well, of course, it's playing the long-term game because in the beginning, with your first couple of releases, you will just not build a strong magnetic brand. Yeah, it's just impossible. You just have to put in a little bit of consistent effort to even make this possible. But there are a couple of things that you can definitely do. And the first thing is to create something that I call touchpoint consistency, meaning wherever people see something of you online, it should portray a certain image. And you have to make sure that this is under your control as much as possible. So if, for example, you create an Instagram page and a TikTok and so on, make sure that those are aligned and try to bring across a certain message of who you are and something that feels true to you. If you are the kind of person that wants to be mysterious, make sure that it's mysterious on all these touch points, on your website, on your social medias, in all interviews that you maybe do. So just be consistent about this. If you are the kind of more approachable artist and that is your vibe, then be approachable everywhere and make sure that this is consistent because that gives people an image of you that is making sense in the grand scheme of things. So touchpoint consistency means wherever they encounter you, they get a similar perception of who you are. Now, this can change over time, of course. Like I said, all of this is fluid, but you at least want to move in the same direction on all these channels. In terms of what do you actually want to do in terms of release promotion, I'm a big fan of something that I call the SMO strategy, story, momentum, and outreach. So story means you actually think about what this release is going to be about. You try to think about, okay, what led up to me creating this piece? So for example, there might be certain moments in your life that have directly influenced what this song is about. There might be a certain technique that you just learned that influenced how you created certain sounds. All of this can influence the story that you tell about your release. And you can obviously tell this on social media. And this also depends on who do you actually want to be. Do you want to be the kind of person that is recording videos of yourself talking about things? Totally okay. If you are a little bit more on the shy side of things and you just want to post some pictures, maybe a little quote that goes with this, even then you can still make it consistent about that specific story. Then momentum means just involving all your existing followers and actually trying to engage them a little bit. So if you have managed to build at least a little bit of an email list of people, for example, offering them a free download of a sample pack that you created for exchange for an email, make sure to involve them early on and get them hyped up for the release, adding valuable stuff to their lives and not just promoting the hell out of your upcoming release. And then outreach is the last component, and this is about actually seeing how you can get into the front of other people's audiences. So this can be, for example, blogs where you submit your stuff to. This can be playlists and using services like Playlist Push and Submit Hub, because all of these playlisters also have their own audiences and you can get in front of their audiences. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people now think about, okay, what about paid ads? Because this is being promoted heavily and every YouTuber about the music industry on earth right now talks about ads and how effective they are. Here's the thing that they don't tell you. The ads are the fuel on the fire. If you don't have any organic following whatsoever, ads will not be the rescue. Ads are what puts fuel on the fire that is already burning. And so I think you have to work with all of these tools basically hand in hand and make sure that this is consistent. You create some organic traction, first of all. You put in the work to get in touch with blogs and with playlists that are maybe not even linked up in Playlist Push or Submit Hub. You try to get maybe a couple of your producer friends to help you spread the word about your newest release in exchange for you promoting their release. So all of these organic efforts basically set the foundation for then creating also a paid campaign on top of that. I don't necessarily think you need to have a paid campaign for the first couple of releases, but once you kind of figured out how everything works and you're not feeling overwhelmed anymore by the release process, this is where you can then unlock the next level and maybe push things a little bit further with an ad budget.
perfect. There's two things I want to talk about. The story part of what you're mentioning. Story is so important. There's a reason why, like, there's still stories and anecdotes that live on in human history from tens of thousands of years ago. Like, stories are how we learn throughout history, and they stick with us, and there's a point to them. And that plays into music as well. When you're promoting your release, making sure you have a, like you said, it doesn't need to be some deep philosophical story that you're telling. It doesn't necessarily need to be that, if that's not what you want. It could be a funny story about how you came up with this idea for this release, or like you said, you're learning a new technique. And also, a story doesn't need to be, you know, 10 chapters long and have an epilogue and a prologue. Like, that doesn't necessarily need to be what it is. It could simply be four paragraphs that you write out that's a part of your post. That is the entire point about telling a story in your release. And the worst thing that you can do is have a one sentence post that says, hey, I got this track, I just released it, it's on Spotify, go to the link in my bio. Like, that's the worst thing that you can do. It's no, how does someone relate to that? There's no relation in what you're talking about or what you're going through or why they should give a shit about this release, right? So spending 5 minutes writing out a few paragraphs on this release, giving it your insights and your thoughts on the whole, how it developed and came to be, that's going to be more relatable. That's what people are interested in. They're going to connect with you more, and that's what's going to get them to actually go click the link in your bio to go stream the track. Anything else, and it's just kind of, you know, if you post emojis, how is that relatable? No one really gives a shit about that. So you have to be relatable in some sense of the way when you're actually making posts and promoting the track itself. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, man. The role of an artist in my social media feed is to inspire me. That's the mission that I want to give artists out there. Inspire me, please. That's why I followed you in the first place. Not to see the latest food porn picture. I'm not interested in that. So I know that it's okay to somehow be approachable and also to share some of your personal insights, if that's your just that's totally okay, but please make sure to inspire me when it comes to your release. And I think we don't have to overthink this whole story part too much. Like, I'm sure you have inspiration and influences. Why not talk about that? Why not share it? Why not share a little bit of the behind the scenes of while you're still creating the track? Why not play a couple of snippets inside your DAW, walking people through this, how you created this? All of the stuff can be interesting for people that follow you. And it's much better compared to just sharing a meme or, yeah, doing the kinds of things that people think they need to do to gain followers. So whenever you think you can hack the algorithm, just do the opposite, go back to the roots, do something that just feels true, where you actually go to bed at night and think, yeah, man, I probably have inspired someone today.
Yeah, and we can go further than that. This all builds off of each other. It all builds off of itself. And this is how you're talking, you know, getting an organic reach. That's kind of where your focus should be. Because, and I like the thought process of building an organic reach. You're actually, I think, the first person to say, you know, ads, don't focus so much on ads. And that should be fuel for the fire. And I love that thought process, because there is something to the idea of, you know, when we're talking about marketing and capitalism and the whole market itself, the whole basis on capitalism is if the market wants it, you're going to be successful. And if you're trying to market something and you're running ads and it's not working, and you haven't tried the organic reach thing, you're probably running into a wall of, like, the market doesn't want this. It doesn't need it. There aren't necessarily people interested in this specific brand that you're promoting. Now, I'm not saying that people don't want your music, but I'm saying the story behind the brand, the character, the brand and color, the name, that sort of thing is not meshing well with what people are interested in. And so that's when you may need to go back to the drawing board. And I think there's a better process of trying to organically get the brand to work. And if the brand works, you're going to start seeing more engagement, and that's going to be your key. In fact, I've got a client awesome chick. Her name's Calesta. She goes by Analog. She's probably listening to this. Her engagement is starting to be, she's getting really, really great engagement on all of her Facebook posts, her Instagram posts. I would say to you, Calesta, it's now time to add fuel to that fire. You've got the organic reach, you have the engagement going, and that's when you should start putting a little extra fuel on that fire. And that thought process of, you know, if people are engaging more, they're starting to follow you through specific posts, or maybe you're commenting on other people's posts and they're seeing that, they're going to your page, they're following you, and they're actively engaging with the thing that you're talking about, then going to the ads. I really like that, because if people are already engaged with your brand organically, they're going to be engaged with your ads when you actually start running them. They're going to follow you through them. And then they're going to organically comment on new posts that aren't necessarily promoted to them.
And here's one more thing. Let's just put this back to reality. Think about how you discovered great artists. When was the last time you discovered one of your favorite artists through an ad versus you discovered it because one of your best buddies recommended it to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now let's be honest with that. Ads are not a discovery tool. They are a tool for people who are already kind of known to then spread the words to make sure that your already existing listeners, you make sure that they know that you put something new out, that it doesn't get lost in the feed somewhere. There's almost like a reminder. And this is why I'm saying add fuel to the fire with ads. This builds on something that's already working organically. Now, I'm pretty aware of me going against the grain a little bit. But this is also something that I want to course correct a little bit in the industry, because right now everyone's trying to sell courses on how to run Facebook ads, Instagram ads, TikTok ads to promote your music, because it gives artists the illusion of predictability. But if you don't have the data yet of something that's working organically, you will probably not come up with the right creatives. You will probably not come up with the right language. You will probably not come up with the right targeting. Whereas if you already have at least a small base of followers and fans, you have something to work with. You actually know who you want to promote your music to.
Do you have an idea of what the, you know, key performance indicators are for organic reach, when an artist can start adding some more fuel to that fire? Or are there specific KPIs, target KPIs, that artists should be working for?
Yeah, I would say the main KPI is depth of connection. So if you have even a small number of people actually messaging you about your music, and not only just leaving a little like or heart symbol or whatever, but actually commenting, actually writing to you, and this happens more frequently, then this is a good indicator that people actually engage with you on a very deep emotional level. And this gives you an idea of who actually cares about you as an artist and your music.
Nice. I love that.
So I know that this is like not as measurable as a lot of people would want it to be, but I just believe in the depth of connection instead of the breadth of connection, basically.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense to start here. Like we're going to lay the groundwork for what this project is going to be, who I am, and get people to connect with that. And once they connect with that, then you can really start hitting the ground running. Do you have any technical insight as to how long you should be promoting a release? Because there is, you know, you don't want to be spamming people too often on a specific release where they get sick and tired and then annoyed, because that can turn off the brand as well. And where you may have a good idea, you may have a good brand, you may have a good project, but you're over promoting a track, or, you know, over explaining a release, that can annoy people and turn them off. And now you've lost that deep connection and that organic reach. Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, this is more about the how compared to the how often.
Yeah.
If you keep on inspiring people, why should they be bothered with your release promotion? So this is more about the how. How do you actually do this? If you, for example, on one post talk with the graphic designer about the concept of this album artwork, or this, like, the single artwork, for example, you discuss this and share this with people, why would this be annoying to someone?
Yeah.
If on the next post, you share a little behind the scenes of how you created a certain breakdown, and you share the joy you experience with this, why would someone be bothered by this? So I'm talking about this. You just have to be creative with what you actually post. And I think a lot of people just do it in a very lazy way talking about, listen to me, here's my release, I'm so cool, hashtag whatever. And this is just not the most clever way of doing it.
Ooh, you know what? I think that this is a genius way of promoting stuff. Fuck all the, hey, my release is coming out in X days. Fuck the pre-save it now, or, you know, releasing countdown stuff. Like, yeah, that, you know, the best way to be promoting it pre and post is like the behind the scenes stuff. I never even thought to talk with the artist, do almost like a little, it could be a written interview or something, but talking with the artist who did the cover art. What inspired you about the song to create this piece of art? Now you're cross promoting as well. Like, you're promoting the graphic artist who could potentially get clients through this post. And they're probably going to be more willing to actually promote your release as well, which is, that's unheard of cross promotion that way. But it's possible if you have a mixing engineer, a great way to get the word out for the mixing engineer and talk with the mix. Hey, what made you want to take the mix in this direction or that direction or with mastering? Like, these are all little ways of you being able to tell your story behind the track, and all the different people who are involved in the project, what is their story in this piece of art? Because they are putting their love and their art into this thing that you're creating as well. And all of a sudden you've got five or six people that you're all talking to about this track, and their thoughts on it and why they went in a specific direction for it. And it's all because you built this small little thing. And it turns out to be a much bigger thing. It gives you way more content to promote, and people get a much deeper insight into who you are as a person and why you're doing certain things.
Let me give you a specific example of my feed when I look at it. There's one artist here from Berlin who's called Kang Ding Ray. It's more like experimental techno electronica artist. A super awesome guy, very talented. You know how I find out about his new releases? He paints the cover artwork himself, and he captures a video of him doing the painting in a very creative way. This freaking inspires me when I look at it. It makes me want to check out the track as well that goes with this artwork. And it doesn't have to be that fancy. You can also make it easy for yourself. So for him, this is easy because he's doing it anyway. And you just have to figure out for yourself what is a framework that you can use again and again that keeps inspiring people. And whatever that is, the interview style thing can work for you, can also be other things, but do something that feels natural to you and that you can repeat, because these frameworks, they are almost like templates or swipe files that you can use again and again with every release.
Yeah, finding the thing that that makes you uniquely you and you interesting as an artist and the things that you care about, right? Not everyone is going to be painting their own cover art. Not everyone is going to be designing their own cover art in general, or doing their own photos or something. Like, if you're starting to get into making visuals and you're making your own visuals behind your tracks, that's a great process of getting people insight into this is how I'm developing this. Or even, like you said, it could be an entire, you could show the entire process of you making the visuals sped up with your track behind it, and how you developed it, and right before the drop, as the drop's hitting, it goes into like the full done visuals. Like, this is a great way of people getting insight into your thought process and how you're developing things. And you can divide that up into even deeper content. You can actually film yourself talking about specific elements that you're working on that were difficult to do, but were well executed. This is all content you can put out in promoting the release. And this is genius stuff that I'm just not hearing people talk about, and it's the stuff that works. This is like the organic way to be building promotion for releases.
Yeah, and it has to feel effortless. This is really important, because a lot of people might listen to this now and think, oh, that's just too much work, I will never come up with something. But I bet if you put in a little bit of energy once to think about these frameworks, what are some frameworks that you can use and repeat, then at some point it will actually feel great.
Yeah.
So for example, when I'm now filming YouTube videos and tutorials for my audience, yeah, guess what? I'm going to talk about things that feel effortless and easy to me that I really want to share. I do it in a presentation way that I enjoy doing, and I try to make it easy for myself as much as possible instead of trying to figure out someone else's formula and trying to emulate that.
Yeah. Dude. Philip, I think that might be it. Do you have any other things you wanted to hit on? Man, that was so much good stuff. It's very juicy. I'm very happy we got to hang out today. Was there anything else you wanted to hit on?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that I want to share with folks is you have to be willing to play this long-term game. And I think it pays off to also invest in yourself, in your craft, in getting better. It's really easy to get lost in these like little tactics, but actually on a large enough time horizon, let's say you want to stay in this game for 3, 5, 10 years, it's almost impossible to fail if you keep on improving and if you keep on adding new skills and establishing deep connections with other people. I really recommend people check out this book called The Practice by Seth Godin. This is almost like the Bible of, I would say, artistry, sticking with it, putting in the work, but also not getting, completely wrecked by all the overwhelm and anxiety and everything that hits you along the way.
Awesome. Philip, is there anything you want to plug? Obviously, plug your mixing and mastering services and your coaching so people can hire you. And anything else, any socials, go ahead and plug it all away.
Yeah, I think the most helpful thing that I can share right now is the free resources people can get at pickyourself.com/framework. This is my finisher framework. It helps people install this operating system of finishing one great sounding track per month consistently. So if you follow this guide and the follow-up emails that will tell you a little bit more in depth what's going on, I think this is a great starting point because it sets you up for success in the long run. And then if someone wants to engage on a deeper level, then go to pickyourself.com/coaching. I would happily take you on, especially if you're a listener to this podcast. I know that you are quality people there and would love to get in touch with you.
Awesome. Philip, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Everyone, if you've got if you want to check out the notes, click on the links. I'll have all the stuff we talked about, all the books that we discussed in the show notes. I'll have links to Philip's stuff as well. Head to enviousaudio.com/episode103. Let me make sure that is actually accurate because, man, I'm getting too many episodes out now. enviousaudio.com/episode102 to check out the show notes. I appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Philip, take care, man. We'll chat soon.
Thanks so much. Great conversation.